This week's War Rocket Ajax is brought to you by Loot Crate. Head over to lootcrate.com/warrocketajax and use the coupon code WARROCKETAJAX to get $3 off a new subscription.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That's War Rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
Welcome to War Rocket Ajax number 350. Matt, we did it. We made it.
Yes, we reached a round number. Congratulations. Congratulations, everyone involved. We couldn't have done it without you.
I want to thank you, Matt, obviously. I want to thank Huge, Rusty, Max Huffman, Bonzo. Oh, I think Fonzo might be... No, I'm not going to do that bit. Matt, it is War Rocket Ajax number 350. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your veteran hosts. It's a couple of veterans here. My name is Chris Sims. With me, as always, is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you celebrating War Rocket Ajax 350 on your favorite day of the year?
You mean on Blaze It? Blaze It Day?
On high-minded Blaze It.
I'm waiting for episode 420, to be honest.
Oh my god. I hadn't even considered that this show would go that long.
Here's what I love about this particular anniversary episode. Every other anniversary episode we've done, we've just been like, what dumb bit are we going to do, right? This one, we starts with you deciding not to do a dumb bit.
We do a lot of dumb bits on this show. In fact, that's kind of what the show is about.
I think this proves that we've truly matured. When we had the opportunity to do a Bonzo voice, we didn't do it.
Well, Matt, for anyone who's jumping on with this episode, this bold new experiment in podcasting, what do we do here on War Rocket Ajax?
We talk to some of our favorites, some luminaries in the world of comic books, and this week we indeed have a luminary, Teeny Howard, who you may know from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Pink, who you may know from the new Magdalena series, who you may know from a great Finn Balor backup in WWE, and much more. I wish we could talk to her about even more of her work, but we only have so much time, and we have Cookout to talk about. So we get to that. But Teeny is here. We're going to talk to her. It's going to be a great interview, and I am really, really looking forward to it. But before we talk to her, Chris, we have some business to take care of, including thanking our newest supporters on Patreon.
That's right, Matt. Now, these are the people who have gone to patreon.com/warrocketajax, and they're kicking in as little as a dollar a month to help us keep the show going, help us keep doing new shows like Snack Situation, help us keeping Movie Fighters going, and getting a lot of bonus content. Like, we just had some fresh ones go up where you and I do some commentary tracks for some pro wrestling, which everybody wanted and no one didn't want. Matt, these are our Patreon backers.
That's right. I believe that the wrestling bonus content is probably going to go sometime over the weekend, so keep an eye out for that. Yes, these are the people who have enabled us to start Snack Situation specials, the first one of which went up last week. We hope people enjoyed that and did not get grossed out too much by the mouth sounds. Please let us know what you would like our next Patreon goal to be. We have kind of settled on it being us catching up on some comic series that we have fallen behind on. We have thought about doing that as a video series rather than an audio series. Let us know if you would like us to do that, because Patreon has capabilities for posting videos. So we may end up doing that, and we may take listener suggestions for what to read. So if that sounds like a good idea to you, let me know. Maybe I'll put up a Twitter poll or something. A couple of Twitter polls, seeing if people think that's a good idea and if they would like it to be a video thing. Anyway, these are our newest Patreon supporters. Jason Baxter.
Oh, I love Jason Baxter. Thanks, Jason.
Cam B.
Thank you, Cam.
Matt Miller.
That's your name.
It sure is.
Thank you, Matt.
And Tim Bennett.
Thank you, Tim.
Those are the people who have gone to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kicked in as little as a dollar to get ad-free episodes of the show. line stepping privileges, bonus content that they pay a certain level for, and much, much more. So thanks to them, and thanks to everybody who is helping us out on Patreon. Chris, now that we've done that, let's do some checks and wrecks.
Let's do it.
Chris, what's going on with you this week?
I want to talk to you about something, and this is going to sound like a wreck, but this is not a wreck. Not because it's something that I don't believe in with all my heart, but because it goes past just being a wreck and into something that I think affects our lives. I want to talk about Fate of the Furious. Now, Matt, you and I have been friends for a long time, but we're not friends anymore. You know that.
I would go so far as to say that we're family.
That's right. We're family. And there's nothing more important to me than family. Specifically, my family that includes Dominic Dom Toretto and the others. Brian O'Connor, Tej, Ramsey, Roman, Michelle Rodriguez, The Rock. They're all my family, Matt. And so I was so happy to go to the theater at 10:30 in the morning, because that is the way you gotta do it. I want to say that first of all, that's a lifestyle choice. If you're going to the movies, it's gonna suck unless you go there at 10:30 in the morning to see Fate of the Furious. Then it's gonna rule super hard, because you get to go have biscuits and then go see a movie. I don't want to spoil anything for you, and I don't really want to spoil anything for our listeners who haven't seen it yet, but I also don't feel like these movies can be spoiled in any way. Like, I feel like I could literally tell you everything that happens, but there is one thing that I want to talk about, and it is a spoiler. It's, Matt, do you care?
Please go ahead with it if you feel a need to speak about it, but a warning to listeners, this is going to be a spoiler, so please skip ahead a bit if you don't want to be spoiled on anything.
Yeah, if you want to go into Fate of the Furious unspoiled on anything, this is not a plot point or anything, but I do want to talk about this. At one point, The Rock says the line, "The only thing I love more than saving lives is my daughter," which is amazing. That is amazing writing. Second, at one point, two dudes are just flying around on jetpacks, and no one even bothers to mention it. It's not even remarked on or explained at all. And when I say jetpacks, I mean like... You're probably thinking about like, The Rocketeer, right, when I say jetpack? What I need you to think about is the Falcon from the movie The Avengers.
Okay.
That's like, they have, like, full-on The Falcon wingsuits that they're flying around on, and it's never addressed. That's just the world. You know, Aiden famously said that the Fast and Furious movies were her favorite superhero movies, and she clarified by saying, "I don't mean the bullshit way that Die Hard is a Christmas movie." Her words, not mine. I mean in the way that Avengers Age of Ultron was a superhero movie, and she is 1,000,000% accurate. The only thing I will say is that Fate of the Furious, I did not think was as good as Furious 7, which is maybe like the movie so exciting that I took my shirt off in the theater. Because I got too hype. Live that Fate of the Furious at 10:30 a.m. lifestyle, and you will not regret that choice. I guarantee it.
So not as good as Furious 7. How does it rank in the canon?
I would say it is... I mean, it's one of the most buck wild installments. I think it's better than 5, and I would probably put it on par with 6. But it did not, like... It did not have the pure... I mean, God, they do fight a submarine at one point, which is not a spoiler, that's in the trailer. Not as good as 7, so I would say probably on par with 6.
Okay, 5 was and remains my favorite, so we'll see how that turns out.
Matt, what are you checking in with this week?
My check is that I'm a homeowner now.
Okay.
I own a house. I Instagrammed a photo of me with the house. I signed a whole bunch of papers. And as such, I am so exhausted, Chris. And I should note, I am still in my old half of War Rocket Ajax headquarters of Clitus Media, the Clitus Media Dome. But within the next like several weeks, I'll be in my new Clitus Media Dome location. But before that, I have to do a lot of painting. I have to get some floors replaced. I bought a lawnmower today, and as I tweeted earlier today, I realized and discovered that lawnmowers of the push variety, not of the riding variety, and just flat-out plain ladders, same price. Like, you will pay the same for just a ladder that you will pay for a lawnmower with a motor, which, wild, buck wild stuff that you learn through homeownership. I'm going to learn how to paint a house. I'm going to learn how to pay for getting floors replaced. It's going to be a fun few weeks, I'll tell you.
Matt, I feel like I often have the reputation as being the less mature of the two of us.
Okay.
And I will not dispute that, because the very idea of homeownership is something I find terrifying.
There are scary parts about it. The fact that there's a place that I own that's a house, and I'm not at it right now, and in fact nobody's there right now, it scares the shit out of me. I'm like, what's going on over there? Oh no. What if a bunch of trees are falling on it? Or all the burglars have broken in?
Okay, look, I know that you are going to be busy with your successfully Kickstarter-funded comic book, Everything Will Be Okay.
Let me take that opportunity for a reminder that none of the money from Everything Will Be Okay went to buying the house. I don't even have that Kickstarter money yet. It's still coming. I bought that house with money I had saved, so nobody get on my case about that shit. Thank you.
Okay, okay, real quick, has anybody been getting on your case about that matter, or is that just preemptive?
I'm worried that people are going to think that I did a Kickstarter so I could buy a house, and it didn't, and that's not how it went down.
Well, I mean, look, I don't want to blow up your spot. I'm guessing that house costs a little more than you got on that Kickstarter.
That is true and fair, yes.
So here's what I'm saying. I think your prequel to Everything Will Be Okay should be the story where every burglar tries to rob the same house.
That's empty with nothing in it.
Yeah, it has nothing in it.
Like, they're gonna get in there, they're gonna find a refrigerator, and that's about it.
Oh man, wait, you shouldn't have said there was gonna be a refrigerator, Matt. Now people are gonna be like using Google Image Reverse Lookup on that Instagram, trying to get that fridge.
I gotta get that fridge. Busy times to come, and I'm already tired. Woo! Okay, let's make some recommendations. Chris, are you? Was that like a check slash rec for Fate of the Furious, or do you have a separate rec?
No, I have a separate rec.
Okay.
My recommendation this week is going to be a video game that I have been playing, which is called Stardew Valley. Matt, are you familiar at all with Stardew Valley?
I am familiar with how much Griffin McElroy likes it.
But it's a very likable game.
I've never played it. My understanding is that it's very relaxing and laconic.
Yes. It's been out for a long time on Steam. It's been available on Mac and PC. But just recently, the console version came out, and I was able to get a review code for it so that I could talk about it here on More Rockin' Ajax. Aiden was a big fan of it, and I know that people who were traditionally into the Harvest Moon games were fans, and those were never games I was into. I never played one, because frankly, it sounded super boring. And sounded like it had a lot of stuff that I wasn't interested in when it came to my video game experience, which is usually typified by Saints Row the Third. I really wanted to give Stardew Valley a shot because it looked like it was going to be really fun. And it is genuinely fantastic. It is a game where you are given a farm. You plant different crops depending on the season. You harvest the crops. You can also go to a mine that contains a dungeon and kind of fight monsters and get stuff. There's townsfolk to talk to. You can romance them and eventually marry one if you would like. You can get a dog and a horse. And you can just like go to a lot of festivals. It is a game that allows me to live out an incredible fantasy, which is that I have a job, and that job is useful and productive, and there's a dog who likes me, and it's Christmas, like, every 4 months. So I am all in for Stardew Valley. The music's great, the graphics are beautiful, the gameplay is really relaxing. I did kind of realize I was a little depressed this week, because I was just playing that game for hours at a time. But it was, you know, very relaxing, very calming, and very fun as well, in a way that calling it relaxing and calming doesn't quite get how fun and interesting it can be. Because you really do, like, you plan out your farm, and you find out that, oh, there are different modifications I can build, and you learn recipes for things, and it's very, very good and very, very interesting, and I've been playing it solidly for an entire week now, and I'm still finding, like, interesting new bits and pieces of it. If you have not played it already, again, it's available now on, I think the special edition is on consoles. So PS4 and Xbox 360, I'm sure. I'm not sure about its state on the Nintendo platforms, or what the state of the Nintendo platforms currently is. But I would guess if it is not on there now, it should be coming soon. So grab it and do some relaxing farming. Matt, what is your rec this week? Besides ladders and push mowers, I guess.
I don't know that I'm recommending those. Those are needs. Because your boy's got to get on the roof now.
Matt, do you feel like those were your last words?
I was on a roof yesterday.
Do you feel like people are going to be like listening to this segment at the investigation?
What was he doing on the roof? How did he become a number one roof boy? I was texting that to Marlene from the roof. I was like, I'm on a roof. I'm a number one roof boy. Okay, my actual recommendation is the new Kendrick Lamar album. What a shock, but it's good. It's called Damn. It's great. I was talking to you, Chris, before we started recording about how it's kind of a stealth. It's not even that stealth. Tribute to Andre 3000. And if there's a way to get me interested in a music album, that is a way to do it. There are a couple songs that are straight up like, hey, guess what Kendrick Lamar really loves? The Love Below. But there are a lot of other good songs on it that aren't necessarily Andre 3000-ish, like the two singles that have come out so far, Humble and DNA. Not super outcasty, but very, very good. And both have great videos. And what's wild after a Kendrick Lamar album comes out now is like, I will listen to the album at home, I will listen to the album in my car, and then I can just go out in the world and hear it. Because so many people are listening to a Kendrick Lamar album. I don't remember necessarily the last musician who you could do that with, but I'll give you two examples. Yesterday, I happened to be in a McDonald's, and I was sitting in the McDonald's eating, and a few tables over, a McDonald's employee was just playing DNA or on their phone, just sitting there at the table listening to it. And it was all I could do not to get up and be like, new Kendrick shit is good, right? And then today I was at the grocery store and somebody was just like getting out of their car and I heard a Kendrick Lamar song coming out of their car. So I feel like the world's on my side with this. And if you haven't listened to Kendrick Lamar's Damn yet, you should.
I feel so behind on music songs these days.
Well, you gotta get that Kendrick. You gotta get that Kendrick.
Apparently.
That's gonna do it for our checks and recs. Chris, let's talk about some comics. A huge event began this week, Chris. Actually, two huge events started, but we're only gonna talk about one of them. The Button.
Well, here's my question, Matt. Normally we pick three comics, and we've picked three comics. Our plan was to talk about Batman and the first installment of The Button, and to talk about the Green Arrow, The Rise of Star City Part 1, which was super wild. But do we, like, can we maybe just talk about The Button?
Well, okay, let's set aside as much time as we can, I guess, to talk about the button, but let's talk very quickly about two other comics just so we get three in. So Green Arrow number 21 came out this week. It is by Benjamin Percy, who has been writing the series since Rebirth, and Juan Ferreira. I'm not exactly sure how to say his name, so apologies there. Juan Ferreira did the art in it. It's got a very Mike Grell sort of feel to it, but is also a very, very modern story about essentially Seattle falling apart and being overrun with corruption and possibly becoming Star City because of a cabal of supervillains deciding that that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
And that is bananas and great.
Yeah, it's bonkers. And I kind of love it because I kind of love that it's like the metaphor of what's going on here is we've had Green Arrow in Seattle for so long. And the reason that Green Arrow was in Seattle is because, you know, Mike Grell put him in Seattle because it was a more, you know, realistic sort of 80s vibe to the book. Like it wasn't going to be in a fake city. It was going to be somewhere real. And then this is like, yeah, okay, but what if we took this real city and we turned it into the DC universe? What would that take? And what that takes is supervillains doing a maybe satanic ritual on the city, because the star of Star City looks like a giant flaming pentagram from supervillain terrorist acts.
And a mayor that threatens city council members' children.
Yeah.
Wild, wild stuff. Also, All-Star Batman number 9 came out this week by Scott Snyder and Jock, which is really interesting, like kind of like weirdly political-ish.
This is the culmination of the second big All-Star Batman arc. All the stuff with the Mad Hatter, with Poison Ivy, with Mr. Freeze, like it's all been part of the same arc that's sort of been building towards this and the reveal of the villain who's behind it. And one of the, like, you know, it is unavoidably politically themed. It takes place in Washington, D.C. One of the things that I really like about it is that, like, it opens with, like, you know, I showed you all the different ways the world could end. Like a devastating plague, or it's the lack of resources, or solipsism. And I love the idea of a book that examines, like, well, what if everybody just decides they want to live in their own world? What if everybody just decides that they don't want to see the world as it is, but instead want to retreat into fantasy? And there's a really, really great sort of line there between what is the sort of maladaptive fantasy that we would be going into that would cause the destruction of the world versus what is Batman? And the idea of no, Batman's not the fantasy. Batman's the fucking solution, and I love it. I love it, Matt. Unsurprisingly, but yeah, a couple of wild books this month.
All right, now we have plenty of time to talk about the button. What did you make of this, Chris?
Okay, well, I just recently got entirely caught up on Tom King's run on Batman with David Finch and Michael Janin, which I talked about in last week's. And I gotta say, like, it does kinda all fit together. Like, there's a reason for Batman to have the Psycho Pirates mask sitting around that right. relates specifically to what's going on with Batman and not what's going on with, like, anything else. And I like that kind of... Okay. It's not just a Watchmen story. It's Crisis.
Kinda, yeah.
Because there's Psycho Pirate stuff. And there's, you know, I've seen all this before stuff. And there's Flash stuff.
Yeah, there's Flash stuff. And there's callbacks to Flashpoint. Because we see Flashpoint Thomas Wayne in here.
There's, like, Flashpoint stuff and Crisis stuff and Watchmen stuff all happening, and, like, I don't know that I have ever been as confused by the metatextual level of a comic as I am with this Batman story where Batman fights Reverse Flash. I'm not confused about the comic itself. The comic itself, very straightforward. The, Batman's trying to figure out what's up with the comedian's button that he's had in the Batcave. So it reacts to the Psycho Pirate's mask because worlds will live and worlds will die and nothing will ever be the same. And then, like, there's a hockey game where someone is beaten to death on the ice, and that's kind of a weird little framing sequence, but I kind of get that because it's a side, like, that feels like this story's version of the pirate story from Watchmen. Because, like, if we really want to get into it, Matt, the trick of the pirate story with Watchmen is that it's kind of, like, a weird metaphorical take on the same story, right?
Yeah.
And this, like, the story that's happening with the hockey game, a guy is literally like, this is a game, the commentator's like, this is a game, we're supposed to be having fun, but this isn't fun, is it? Like, we're just watching a guy, like, get beaten to death. And I'm like, okay, I get what you're saying about DC Comics. I get what you're saying about superheroes in general. And I feel like this goes back to the idea of, we gotta go through it to get past it. It plays out in such a weird way that, like, I'm kind of, like, this isn't the comic where I read it and I was like, oh, this is, you know, this is trash, like, because they're dealing with Watchmen stuff. This is a comic where I'm reading it and I'm like, I'm with it, but I'm leery, I guess, is the way to put it.
I feel like there are elements in here that are distinctly here to not pull me out of the story, and I don't know that they're intentional, but there are several things where while I was reading this where I couldn't get engrossed in the story because I was too... There were things that were pulling me out of it. One of them is just like a lettering thing. Because In all those shots within the 9-panel grid of the TV screen showing the hockey game, it's the classic squiggly balloon indicating commentary coming out of the TV.
Mm-hmm.
But they all come to a point, so it looks like the hockey players are saying it instead of like announcers.
Mm-hmm.
And that threw me. Like, that was just like a weird like lettering thing that was kind of odd. But then on top of that, like, there's a very Geoff Johns-y line. Tom King may have written every word of this himself, but this feels like Geoff Johns saying, like, okay, so when Batman wonders aloud why the Flash is early, because part of this issue is it almost all takes place over the course of a single minute, because the Flash says he will be there in a minute because he's caught up in this fight that he's got going on. And then
which is a reference, by the way, to one of those Mark Waid Brave and the Bold issues where the Samuroids show up.
Yeah.
And it's a Batman Flash team up story from like 2007.
And then a clock starts ticking down from 1 minute. And Another thing that kind of threw me out of the story was that, like, they were talking and saying things that would take more than 1 second to say within a single second. But
I didn't mind that because that's very comic booky.
Sure. You know,
like but I thought the countdown clock gimmick was really well done. There's a part where
it's a neat gimmick.
It's a neat gimmick, and like what you think is going to happen is it's just going to count down for the next 60 panels of this 9-panel grid. And what happens instead is that, like, Reverse Flash shows up and starts beating the shit out of Batman. And so, like, instead of being like, you know, 51, 50, 49, 48, then you get like 46, 46, 46, 46, and it's all this stuff happening to Batman in the same second. I thought that was really cool, actually.
Yeah, there's some neat things within the gimmick. There are just a few things that kind of threw me out of it. And then there's that Reverse Flash line where Batman is like, why are you here early? It's not like you at all. And then Reverse Flash goes, oh, I'm not Flash. Quite the reverse. And that is so Geoff Johns-y. It is 1,000,000% Geoff Johns.
Well, it's worth noting that Johns and Josh Williamson, who's writing Flash, do get a special thanks in this. Because this is the first time we've seen, like, the Watchmen stuff since, I guess, the Rebirth special, right?
Yeah, which was written by Geoff Johns. The other thing is, so Jason Fabok, who does the art for this, is trying to do the 9-panel grids from Watchmen.
Mm-hmm. I will say, like, I have not always been the biggest fan of Jason Fabok. I think he does a pretty solid job with this.
It's solid, but I think there are a few places in this where he is trying to force the 9-panel grid and where he is cheating the 9-panel grid where it's maybe not even worth really doing if you're not going to really do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
He does cheat it a couple times. He does some good stuff, and he does some stuff that kind of doesn't work with it. Like he has like a 3-panel triptych of like the like Batman like falling down, and it's like clearly one shot that just is broken up into 3 panels.
Yeah, that's the biggest cheat that I can remember.
Yeah, it's a cheat, but it's not terrible. I didn't think.
I mean, that's fair. Another thing, there are parts of it where it's just like, if you're gonna do this, just do it right. Like. Mm-hmm. Like, it starts with a really close shot of the center ice of the hockey game, right? But the cover isn't just red, like you would expect. The cover isn't the first panel.
The cover isn't the first panel, and that's the worst thing about this comic, because it almost is. Because Batman says, yeah, I was just looking at that button we found in the cave and trying to figure it out. And if you look at the cover, if it was just Batman holding up the button, that's the first panel. But it's not. It's this weird, like, split-screen thing between Batman and Flash. And, like, look, if you're going to do the Watchmen homage, don't half-ass it.
That's what I'm saying. Well, the very first panel in the book is a close-up of the hockey.
Close-up of the hockey ice, yeah.
Yeah, so the cover should just be red.
Yeah, or the cover should be, like, or the first panel of the story should be, like, Batman looking at the, like, setting the button down next to the Psycho Pirates thing.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. But, like, again, I just feel like if you're going to do it, do it. And I know that there are considerations to make, and somebody high up probably was like, well, we can't make the cover that. And whatever, but not that I feel like I'm mostly complaining about this, and it's just because I'm pointing out the stuff that drew me out of the story. I am intrigued. I am interested. There are a lot of ways this could go bad, but if you're putting this in the hands of Tom King and Josh Williamson, I got to at least give it a try. And there's nothing in this that actively turned me off. There were just things where I felt like the execution isn't as good as it could be if you're, this is the really the thing you're going to do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Very much so.
All right. We've talked about the button. Chris, it's time for us to talk to Teeny Howard, but before we do, let's talk a little bit about Loot Crate.
Matt, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
What is Loot Crate?
Okay, so last week I said I was going to give you a test.
Uh-huh.
And you've already failed it.
Oh, no. Matt.
I was going to ask you piece by piece what Loot Crate is.
Okay, well, let's see if I can remember it. Give me a shot here, okay? Like, just try me out.
I'm going to give you some fill-in-the-blank statements, and you just fill in the blank, okay?
Okay, okay.
Loot Crate is a blank subscription service.
Web-based?
I mean, you're kind of right. Monthly is the word I was looking for.
Monthly, okay, okay.
When you sign up, you get 6 to 8 blank items sent to your house every month.
Edible.
No, they're not edible.
Oh.
It's not like Blue Apron. It's like they're exclusive items that are like cool things that are linked to franchises.
Right. Sorry. Yeah. I got a little confused. I'm good now.
Each box includes a blank shirt and blank.
Edible?
No. You really, here on 420, you're really into edibles, huh?
It's been a while since dinner. I think our recording is running a little later than usual. I'll see if I can get a snack later.
It's a t-shirt and a pin in every box.
Okay. Okay.
This one is more open-ended. Franchises in Loot Crates over the past months have included such cool franchises as blank.
RoboCop.
Yeah, you got that one. You got that one.
Fallout.
Yeah, yeah.
Mass Effect.
That's a good one, yes.
Lego Batman.
Yeah. Now, this part you're doing great on.
M&M's?
No. I mean, okay. Maybe there could be an M&M's thing in a loot crate at some point in the future, but I'm not familiar with M&M's being part of a loot crate. Try this one. If you go to lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax and use the offer code WarRocketAjax, you can get blank off of a brand new loot crate subscription.
$3.
Yeah, you get $3 off. That's very good. That's very good. Well, Chris, you did pretty well on the test this time. You didn't forget everything about Loot Crate. You really dug in deep into there being food in it, which is not usually the case.
I got a little hungry.
I mean, I understand. A lot of it's stuff you can wear. It's stuff you can display in your home. It's stuff you can use in the kitchen. If you know, you're into cooking, you might get, like, you know, cool stuff that's branded with a franchise you like to use around the house or in the kitchen. But generally, not stuff you eat, more stuff you display and just use and that's cool and that you will like. So go to lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax. Use the coupon code WarRocketAjax. Get $3 off that brand new subscription. And never forget how cool Loot Crate is.
That's what Loot Crate is.
Chris, let's talk to Teenie Howard.
Joining us for the program this week, for our 350th episode, we're very excited to have a writer on the show who you may know from The Magdalena, which we talked about a couple weeks ago, from a backup story in WWE number 3 about Finn Balor that I want to know literally everything about, and from other comics projects as well. Teenie Howard is here. Teenie, welcome to War Rocket Ajax. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me, you guys, on this wonderful 20th day of April, which has no meaning at all to us good church-going folk. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited. I actually listened to your episode where you guys said really nice things about both Magdalena number 1 and WWE number 3, and thank you guys so much. That was a great episode because you guys are really great, and also because you said nice things about me. So it was probably my favorite.
I'm going to give you some options to start off with here, Teenie.
Dangerous, but okay.
We can start with us asking about your work and kind of getting into all that, or you can go ahead and start yelling at me about New Teen Titans Now, which you emailed me and told me you wanted to do.
That's true. Let's see. I don't know. I get asked about my work a lot, and I feel like if we get heated, we can use that to calm down. So maybe we should start with New Teen Titans, because
okay,
if this gets ugly, then Matt can step in and be like, so about writing about Finn Balor, and we can veer off if we need to. But I have to say, you know, Chris, I've been reading your column for a long time. I'm a fan of yours, and I don't recall where it was, but I do remember at some point reading one of your columns and seeing you throw some shade at Marv Wolfman and George Perez's beautiful, you know, the seminal, like, when it comes to just bright madness 80s comic work, New Teen Titans. And I thought, you know, I disagree with this because I think New Teen Titans, and specifically, I think the Judas Contract is one of the best comic stories of all time. And I want to hear more before I get heated. I have a drink in hand. It's a nice evening. I'd like to have a sporting conversation about our disagreement.
That would be the column where I use the phrase, it's been 30 years, isn't it time we all just admit that New Teen Titans isn't that good?
Yep, I think that was the one, actually.
Yep, that was an Ask Chris. And the premise of that column, which I will stand by, was that New Teen Titans was the knockoff X-Men. And it was never as good as X-Men. In the early 80s, it was DC's attempt at doing X-Men. And I should say, I said all this before I wrote the X-Men, long before.
Right. Right.
Now I am definitely a partisan, but as someone who really tried to get into New Teen Titans, because I love teen superheroes. I love Robin. I like a lot of those characters, and I like a lot of the stuff that those characters have done in the years since. I just feel like New Teen Titans is, in a way, very... It is very 80s DC, but not in the way that the DC stuff I like from the 80s. It's not a Suicide Squad. It's not a Justice League International. Sure. It's very much of its time and place in a way that I think just doesn't hold up when you compare it to the competition. Like, to the thing that it's obviously trying to react to.
Well, let me come at you from an angle where, you know, where I point out that I come to New Teen Titans from a really different space than a lot of people, right?
Okay.
So, I did not grow up reading superhero comics. I didn't go into a comic shop until I was 18, 19, 20. I read comics, like, at bookstores. New Teen Titans, Judas Contract was 84. I was born in 85. So I never read it as a kid. I also did not read the X-Men of that era when I was a kid. I also did not like the popular Teen Titans TV show. For me, New Teen Titans was something I went back and read after I really, you know, was reading a lot of modern comics and fell in love with Nightwing. And was like, oh, I really love this character. Where does he come from? So I read New Teen Titans for the first time maybe 5 years ago. So okay. I think it's interesting to be like, it doesn't hold up, it doesn't compare, because that's usually when people that don't like it tell me, they say, it's nostalgia, you like it because of nostalgia, but for me, it isn't nostalgia. I'm not comparing it to the X-Men of the time, so that's not coloring my perception. It's also, for me, no more a product, I mean, like, I love it because it's a product of its time, and because there's a lot of earnestness in it, and because it manages to not sound like too... It's weird because there's so many... I compare it a lot to Peter David's X-Factor, where when you look at a team book of a lot of, like, cool, diverse characters, and you're like, but this is, like, old white dudes doing this. Like, it shouldn't feel so real and so good, but it does. Like, to me, reading New Teen Titans didn't feel, like, cheesy. I mean, the dialogue, and you know, there's the, like, Starfire with her big green eyes and her, like, Led Zeppelin t-shirt. Sure, there's, like... I think that's amazing. Like Starfire laying on her bed in a Led Zeppelin t-shirt, kicking her feet and talking about how much she loves Nightwing. Like, that's me, okay? Like, I love that. But I think it's interesting. Like, I think that those are books where it's like, you know, there's just some really interesting craft going on there where you're seeing stuff that... So I don't know. I'm rambling. But I come from a totally different perspective. I don't compare it to... And you're right. It might have totally been... For you, who's someone who loves, you know, 80s X-Men, it might read as really reactionary. And probably, I don't doubt that you're wrong there, or that you're right there. I don't doubt that you're right there. But for me, someone who didn't have that perspective when I first read it, it was really magical.
I think it's really interesting that that's the way you came to it, because I really, like, I was aware of the Teen Titans, and I was obviously aware of Wolfman and Perez, because, you know, when you're a kid and you're really into DC Comics, you read Crisis, because you think that's a thing you should do, which is also another book I've written about being not as good as we all kind of agreed it was 30 years ago. I actually came to New Teen Titans when I was working at the comic book store, and I got really into back issues. I'd always been into, like, reading current stuff and getting into whatever was available in paperback at the time. I remember, like, being really excited about reading Emerald Knights, the storyline where Hal Jordan is kind of time lost and ends up teaming with Kyle Rayner for a week.
Yeah, everyone that's worked in a comic shop has found issues.
Yeah, I got so excited when I got that paperback of Emerald Knights, and everyone I worked with looked at me like I was a crazy person for saying, yeah, I'm gonna go home and read Emerald Knights tonight, what's up?
You want to hear my version of that?
Oh, I please.
Special order the Widening Gyre. literally the worst Batman story I'm gonna go ahead and say ever written. Because I was like, oh, cool, Batman. And, like, I'd been listening to Fatman on Batman and was like, wow, Kevin Smith wrote Batman? This dude's like a Batman scholar. There's no way this book can be bad. Yeah, and then I read it, and I had to, like, I went into a store and, like, picked it up and, like, picked up my special order and went home and read it, and then, like, had to go back in that store again and show my face.
Yeah, I'm really glad that that's not the book you wanted to come on and have words with me about.
That's not the book I want to die on at all. No. But I was also really excited about, like, the resurrection of Ra's al Ghul. I love that story, and I totally did, like, dig all the issues of that story out of, like, a back issue box somewhere and was like, yes! I still love that story.
I can confirm, according to the Every Story Ever list, Batman the Winding Gyre is, in fact, the worst Batman story.
It really is.
According to our very scientific rankings, it is the worst.
We are merely the arbiters.
So Teenie, I do have questions for you about Finn Balor.
Okay,
and
yeah.
About the Magdalena also. But before we get to those, I do have a question for you, because one thing we like to do here on War Rocket Ajax, if we can, is talk about local things that we are aware of. One time we talked to Kyle Starks for almost an entire interview about Jungle Jim's grocery store in Ohio.
Okay.
You are in Wilmington, North Carolina, as I understand
it. Correct.
Which PTs is your favorite?
I don't know that I've ever been to the PT, any of them.
Okay. Because for listeners that don't know, PT's is like three or four burger spots in Wilmington, yeah. Burger places.
There are ads for them everywhere.
Yeah. And my brother, when Wilmington was still a movie town, lived in Wilmington for several years doing movie stuff. And, like, every time I was around Wilmington, he would say, hey, go to PT's. Be sure you go to PT's. And so, Wilmington is one of the only cities in North Carolina that I know of where people won't recommend for you to go to a barbecue place. They will tell you to go to specifically to a burger place. And they will tell you that one PT's is better than all the other locations, but they all have different ideas of which PT's is the best.
You know what? I'm honestly really like, I'm not from North Carolina originally.
Yeah.
So there's like a North Carolina institution that's still really novel to me. So like when I'm like in a mood and I really need a hamburger, I go to Cookout, because Cookout is still novel to me, being from Northern Virginia.
Okay. Let me tell you where I ate every night at 3 a.m. when I was in college.
Oh, my God, when you went to college?
I went to college in Winston-Salem.
Yeah, okay.
Home of Cookout.
Yeah. Cookout is amazing. The fact that they have a walk-up window at their drive-thru means you know your drunk-ass audience. Like, I love Cookout. I'm like, it's like, I have $5 in my pocket, but I want a milkshake, a quesadilla, and a hot dog, and a burger. And you can make that happen. That place is magical.
The way that I always describe Cookout to people is that it's a place where you can get a hamburger and then get two sides, and those sides can be corn dogs.
Or chicken nuggets, or a quesadilla, an entire quesadilla, or like a chicken wrap, which is just like a flour tortilla full of cheese and chicken tenders and hot sauce, which if that doesn't sound good to you, you have never lived in the South. So
have you ever wanted hush puppies with every meal? Let me tell you where you can go.
And like, and on top of all that, I want like a Snickers milkshake. Like, because that's what Cookout's here for.
God and a cheerwine to go.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so I never really go to PT's, because whenever I want like a burger, I go to Cookout, which sounds silly because it's like they're a drive-thru, but they literally have grills inside there and there's like smoke coming out the top. Like, I'm a Cookout girl through and through.
Well, that's good. I can't fault that. I remember when being so shocked when there were sit-down Cookouts. Like, where you could go in and sit down.
We just got one in Wilmington. Like, our first sit-down Cookout. And I was like, I went in and it looked like a Wendy's. And I was like, this is like finding out that the guy at the mall that plays Santa Claus isn't actually Santa Claus. He's just, like, an old man with a beard who wants kids to sit on his lap. I'm like, I don't need to see behind the curtain.
The one here in Asheville is like a ski lodge. It's all, like, wood paneling.
I don't like that at all.
Oh yeah, the one in Sumter where I used to live was like that. And Matt, would you believe that this is not the only time today I have heard someone express surprise at the idea of a Cookout with a dining room?
Yeah, well,
they
used to not be a thing. Okay, I just wanted to get the local cuisine out of the way.
This has inspired me to actually go to a PT. I will tell you, though, real quick, if you're ever in Wilmington, and you go to the beach, specifically Carolina Beach, because there are like three beaches in Wilmington. If you go to Carolina Beach over the bridge, there's a place called Big Daddy's on Carolina Beach, or it's by the Curie Beach Pier, where like if you go fishing, yeah, which I do because I live in North Carolina. Anyway, the thing about Big Daddy's, the food is not great. There's nothing great about Big Daddy's. The thing about Big Daddy's is that it's like a seafood pirate Long John Silver's themed Cracker Barrel. So it has like the front room that's full of like pirate toys and pirate themed candy and saltwater taffy and like octopus toys. And then you go and you eat like hush puppies and fried fish. So I love it because it is a seafood themed Cracker Barrel. And I always get like pirate hats and telescopes and eye patches and shit and then terrorize my friends for the rest of the weekend by talking in a pirate voice. So
It's in line with all that Blackbeard shit.
Exactly. We're a big pirate city. There's always like a pirate cruise where a bunch of like, I've never been to it because I'm always afraid it's just a bunch of Renfair swingers on a boat and I don't want to be trapped in a boat with people. But I do have I do go to the Renfair and I have a really nice pirate outfit. So I would like to go to like an event where I could show off my cool pirate outfit, but I don't want to be trapped on a boat with like old Renfair swingers. So I've never been. But there is like a pirate ball on a boat every year.
Well, Teeny, please report back to me on Twitter or elsewhere. Which PT's location is your favorite?
Because I know, now I'm inspired to go to
People have strong opinions. Speaking of Renfair types, Finn Balor.
Yeah.
So I want to know how you were approached or how you approached Boom about your backups, or that backup in particular, in the WWE comic, because...
Oh.
It feels like the main story of that WWE comic is so, like, in-universe, in kayfabe, WWE, and then the backups are just Finn Balor in Demon World.
Yeah.
Finn Balor fighting a demon in rhyme, which I was astonished and impressed by.
Thank you. No, this is a great story. So, I had been talking to Eric Harburn, who's an editor over at Boom, for a while. You know, just, he liked some stuff I worked on. I loved some books he made. He's definitely someone who I think has a really cool editorial style. We were just, you know, doing that thing where you're just hanging out at, you know, cons. We, you know, get a drink and chit-chat, and I'd send him pitches every once in a while when I had them. And, you know, I wasn't really getting anything off the ground, but we were staying in touch. And then, you know, I started to hear rumblings as things happen in the comic industry. You hear mutterings here and there. I started to hear rumblings that, you know, maybe Boom was going to do WWE comics. And, like, again, like I mentioned earlier, I've worked at a comic store. I've seen a lot of bad wrestling back issue comics come through. But I really was like, you know, like, this sounds pretty cool. I don't even remember if I'd gotten the Power Rangers gig yet. But I've been, like, talking to people at Boom for a while. The announcement came out, you know, that Boom was doing WWE comics. They made their first announcement. And so I instantly sent Eric an email, as I'm sure 40 other people did. And my subject line of my email was just, I have no chill. And I was just like, Eric, oh my God, like, you gotta let me do something. And he was like, okay, well, I'll put you in touch with Jazz and Mary, who edits everything over there. And you put me in touch with Jazz. And Jasmine, if you don't know, is also a huge Finn Balor fan. And she was like, okay, well, we're doing some backups. Who do you want to write about? And I was like, well, I would really love to write, like, two of my favorites are Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, but they're kind of the focus of the main story. So I don't really think that's an option. But my other two people I'd really want to write about, it would be Finn Balor and someone else I named who I've written a backup for, which has not been announced yet. So I have another one coming. Theoretically, maybe, hopefully. But for Finn Balor, I started thinking, I was like, well, I totally want to do an Irish folk song. Like, that just seems like the thing to do. I guess I started with the idea that I wanted to do an Irish folk song, and from there, the reality of it became less and less tangible, because I was like, it's an Irish folk song. Like, they're all about, like, people meeting demons on the road. And that was, for me, it was like a way to do something like that that's totally off the wall. I mean, you see, like, Sarge Acuna's amazing art of him, like, wrestling. He does the sling blade on the Demon King because I'm dumb. I thought that was great. But, you know, it's like, if you do something and you tell it like a folk song or a folk story, you can do something a little more fantastical without it seeming totally out of kayfabe. So it's like, the theory, I guess, when I was writing it, was that it was less a legit story about how Finn Balor actually wrestles a real-life demon and takes his power, and more of a, this is what people say about this guy. This is a song about how this guy got so good. And they say he wrestled a demon on the highway. And so to me, it was just like a, I don't think one element, like for me, one element didn't work without the other, but the element of making it a folk song came before the element of putting in Balor the Demon King. But I also did a bunch of research about Balor the Demon King and about Finn McCool and about Loch Ness Wheel and about the story. I mean, I'm a mythology geek, so I spent a bunch of time reading about Irish mythos and the demons and stuff there. And I was like, you know what? This is like, it's like Finn McCool. I mean, that's Finn Balor obviously took part of his name from Finn McCool. So let's do a Finn McCool story. And nobody told me no at any point. Nobody told me I was not allowed to do that. So I did it.
Well, I really love the idea that you put forth in this story, which is that Finn Balor, the wrestler, is Finn, the guy, and Balor, the Demon King, who have been merged into one entity through a fist fight on the highway.
Well, thank you. I don't know. I'm a real, I really like good stories in wrestling. Like, I mean, I know that sounds like when people say they read Playboy for the letters, but like, I really do like a good story in my wrestling. And I think like a lot of like comic writers who watch wrestling, we sit there and we like fantasy book and we think of like how we would do this story and stuff. And for me, it was just like one of those implied things that I feel like I'm sure the WWE writers think of, but there's just no eloquent way to put it into the show, is the idea that like, well, you know, it's a scary thing to wear a demon's power out and around, so you only do it when you really need, you know. And it's like, maybe it's because Serge is such a brilliant artist that to me, like, it didn't feel incongruous at all. I was just like, yeah, like, this, yeah, this is what happens. And everyone was like, how did they let you write a story where he literally wrestles a demon? I was like, I don't know. No one told me no. Like, but in my mind, it was like, it's less of a, it's more of the structure of it being a folk song. Like, I don't think it would have worked if I would have just been like, Finn wrestles a demon on the highway. Like, when I pitched it as a, this is going to be like a song or a poem. Like, this is a folk tale that, you know, people would tell about this guy. Like, what we're seeing is, like, imagine you're sitting around a campfire and someone's like, well, this guy wrestled a demon and this is just what I've heard. So for me, it's not incongruous to the main series because it's a folk story. It's a song. It's with things like, and also, like, you know, life hack, when you're writing comics and you have two pages to tell a story, a poem is a really good way to do that, or a song is a really good way to do that.
And I mean, also, like, of all the venues to do that in, like, WWE is a place where you have characters where it's like, yeah, yeah, this person trained really hard and they fight good, and then this person has magic powers and they make fire come out of the ring posts. They exist in the same, in the same universe, in the same place.
Well, I'm like, I love, I don't know, I guess it's like, this is, I'm going to get real flaky here for a minute, but like, you know, when we think of things like urban fantasy, the idea of like, most of it is just like our own life, but then there's something sinister beneath the surface. Like, I think that WWE kind of operates in that mindset where it's like, for the most part, these are all just like people and brawlers and heroes with dreams, or villains with, you know, dreams of destroying other people, or heroes with dreams of destroying other people, or whatever. But also, it's like, when you literally have people who are like, you know, like the Undertaker, who is like a undead wizard, or a, people like Aleister Black in NXT, who are like a satanic priest or something. Like there's this like kind of thing in WWE where it's like, you kind of have to accept that it operates under the rules of urban fantasy. Of that, like, you've got like the Wyatt family, who are like a bunch of like creepy True Blood villains. Like, you've obviously, part of the caveat of the universe is that magic or something has to exist in some way. Otherwise, these people are all just crazy Ren Faire swingers making shit up.
Now, Matt, was it you and me who were talking, and you pointed out that it was something that I could not believe, which was that The Undertaker was the most successful of the occupational gimmicks.
Yeah, I mean, people bring up the occupational gimmicks and how much of a failure they were and how bad they were, but The Undertaker was one of them, so you can't really do that.
Yeah, like, it's just so hard for me to imagine, you know, the zombie cowboy being in the same stratus as the evil dentist, who then turned into a demon.
Like, I watch WWE with the mindset of that it's an urban fantasy. Of that, like, there's a corporation and people that want to be a part of that corporation, and some of them want to fix it and some of them don't, and some of them just want to do what they're good at, and you know, they're willing to let the corporation allow them to do that. But then also there's this urban fantasy element, like the demons are real, magic is real. It sounds stupid, but like, to me, watching it with any other veil over your eyes is stupid. Like, why? Like, I mean, if you don't accept that, like, people like Finn Balor and, you know, The Undertaker and Triple H are dipping into some sort of, like, okay, like, the whole, like, Sons of Anarchy shit, Triple H, I love Triple H, but the whole, like, Sons of Anarchy shit at WrestleMania, I was like, that was not nearly as cool as him just coming out as, like, a Game of Thrones villain with the skull mask, and, like, Stephanie as, like, Tina Turner beyond Thunderdome. Like, that was much cooler. Like, lean into the fact that there is a weird fantasy element to this, but don't lean into it so hard that it becomes hard to swallow, you know? Like, I don't know. Like, to me, that's of course there's magic. We've all seen it, but we don't talk about it because that would make us go crazy, right? Like, this is why, like Lovecraftian WWE, right? Like, we have a sanity level to maintain. We can't look too far into the abyss or we'll go mad.
Like, how else could Bray Wyatt have made those roaches appear on the ring?
Right. Like the Wyatts obviously are much cooler if they actually have tapped into some sort of power. Also, like, if anyone's listening, it would also be cool if they actually started winning matches.
yes. Thank you very much.
If Bray Wyatt could win a match ever, that would make him a lot scarier. But yeah, like, I think it's just cooler if you just... World of Darkness, WWE, right? It's like, obviously magic exists, but none of us can talk about it, so let's just keep our heads down and hit each other. And there's an evil corporation running everything.
I love this, because I thought we were going to have two distinct conversations about WWE and then about Magdalena, but we clearly don't. It's clearly the same conversation.
It's, yeah, I just exist in a certain level of denial about the world as we live in it, and I just write everything from that space. Like demons, probably cyborgs, I'm sure. Like, just whatever, throw it at me. But yeah, no. Yeah, I could see a WWE Magdalena Clark crossover, except that would never happen because I don't have any power to make either of those brands crossover.
No, but it's something. Well, first of all, I have one more question about WWE. You said several times that nobody told you no on anything, which in my experience is the best way to write comics, is when you think you're getting away with something.
I mean, I know that I got notes, but nobody told me no to the demon thing.
Well, what was the, like, who did it have to go through? Like, did it, like, presumably someone in the office at WWE had to read that and be like, yeah, this is fine. That's what Finn Balor's in-continuity origin story is going
to
be.
Yeah, I mean, there's a licensor, obviously. Like, and, you know, editorial sends it to the licensor and we get approval. So, yeah, I mean, somebody read it and was like, I mean, yeah. But I don't know. Like, to me, it's not, but, like, that's really exciting to me that that's, like, they approve that as continuity. But at the same time, like, it's deliberately written as a, like, this is what people say about that guy.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, if I had been like, this is Finn's origin, they might have said no. But if they were to be like, no, we're writing that his origin is his dad's a demon or whatever, I guess I could be like, well, you know, but this is what they say. This is what, you know, if you're the janitor at the Irish wrestling gym, this is what you hear about this guy, is that he wrestled a demon on the road.
So, moving on into the Magdalena, which is your other current project that I really had a lot of fun with. This is the, for the record, I don't know if I mentioned this when we reviewed it, it's the second comic with the character of the Magdalena that I have ever read, and the other one was by Darwin Cook. So that is the company you are in.
Darwin Cook Magdalena? How did I not know this?
Yeah, it was a Witchblade animated. Was the name of it. I think it actually had art by J-Bone and a cover by Bruce Timm and was written by Cook.
I just Googled this. Wow! Okay, anyway, keep going. Sorry.
Yeah, that was one of those working at the comic book store books that I picked up back in the mid-2000s. What was your approach to that book? Because it feels very new reader friendly. It feels like very from the ground up, rebuilt.
When Ryan Cady, my co-writer, first approached me, and he was kind of like, "Hey, let's write a Magdalena book together," which I was really excited about because I knew that that had always been one of Ryan's dream projects, and so for him to want to have me along with him was really exciting because he's like a good friend of mine. So it's been a lot of fun having like one of my dearest friends ask me to come along with him on his dream project, on a project that I also really had a lot of ideas on. But we work really well together. One of the big things I had brought up, I had pitched a Witchblade story that worked like this that didn't happen, was the idea of like, look, all of these, the Witchblade and Magdalena are both based on the idea of this line of women, but we never see one woman training the other. And it's like, she always dies when she's still like young and hot, and then a new young hot one picks it up. And I was like, I like the idea of a woman, first of all, women mentoring women, which I don't think we have enough of in comics. And secondly, the idea of a woman mentoring a woman means that she is having to face the fear of her own obsolescence. And for me, I was like, one of my favorite things that deals with that is Batman Beyond, of someone dealing with, or the last season of Buffy, someone dealing with their own obsolescence, but knowing that the future will be better for it. And I really wanted to write Patience Training a new Magdalena, because then one, we would have a new Magdalena for new fans and the classic Magdalena for for older Top Cow fans. Cause so many people were like, is Patience staying? And we were like, oh my God, everyone loves her. We know she's not going anywhere. But I really loved the idea of both having, from a new readership sense, having a new one and the classic one. And also having a grown-ass woman train a 19-year-old woman, having women that aren't 25 and under in comics, and also, that idea of patients having to train Maya and be like, I have to find my replacement. I have to deal with the fact that I might be taking one step closer to obsolescence every time she lands a hit. But this sisterhood, the sphere is bigger than me.
I think that's really, it felt, as someone new to the franchise, everything that I needed to know was in there. And it also set up a relationship that felt fresh. But, I mean, putting it in the context of being Batman Beyond for Witchblade, really, of course, it's playing on those themes in an interesting new way. And that's, no wonder I loved it so much, because I really thought it was a super strong first issue.
I'm so glad. Yeah, we really loved it a lot. I will confess, I wrote the last few pages of number 4, which is the end of our first arc, the other day, and I was listening to Cry Little Sister while I wrote it, and I was teary-eyed. I was having this moment, and was just like, yeah, like, you ever just finish writing something and you feel not like, okay, we're done. You just feel like, I am proud of that one, man. I felt good. But thank you so much for your kind words about it. And I love the Top Cow universe. And I'm always eager to bring new people into it. And Christian Dabari and Mike Spicer are artists and our color artists. They're so good. They do such a brilliant job of making it look like a horror book, which is what we wanted. We were like, we want it to look like Hellblazer. We don't want it to look like, we don't want her to be a cheeky hero, like a cute little girl hero. We don't want her to be, a sexy hero. We want it to look like Hellblazer. and Castlevania and those influences. You know, John Carpenter, those were our influences, and Christian nailed it. Mike nailed it.
That's like a bullet point list of stuff that I love. So,
no wonder you loved it then,
Teeny, like, we have so much to talk about. Like, I did not know you had worked in a comic book store, and now I want to have that conversation. Oh. But it is now the time of the interview where we turn it over to our listeners to ask Twitter questions. And Matt, if our listeners want to get in on these conversations that we have about North Carolina local restaurants and pro wrestling, how exactly can they go about that?
As the listener walks down the dusty trail, a query becomes in their mind to avail. They sign up for an account on Twitter.com, and at Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, that's 6:30 Pacific, they log on.
And then they fight a demon.
that's a near rhyme.
Did and then they fight a demon. Rhyme? Did you write that in rhyme in honor of me?
I'm coming up with this on the fly, which is very hard.
That was wonderful.
Then they follow the Matt D. Wilson and the ISB. One is me, one is Chris. And ask questions like the questions I'm about to ask Teeny Howard, not in an hour, but right now. This question is from Discord_Inc. on Twitter.
Who wants to know?
Yeah, it's James Fletcher. You've already mentioned two of them as being your favorites. Who is the dreamiest member of the Shield?
Seth. Seth is the dreamiest. I mean, I love Dean in the same way that, like, when I find like a bird with a broken wing, I just want to like put it in a shoebox and stare at it and give it like sugar water until it feels better. But Seth is the dreamiest. He's CrossFit Jesus. Like, he also like occasionally tweets things about eating like pumpkin spice flavored like protein bars. And I really like to pretend that like he would just want to like wear UGG boots and leggings and go to Target and buy cheap wine with me.
Those all seem like things Seth Rollins could definitely.
Yeah. And then we would sit in my car and listen to Avenged Sevenfold on the way home. And we would just own our like trashy girl selves. It'd be great.
We've got a handful of questions about some work of yours that we didn't get to, but I'm glad that the Twitter questioners brought this up.
This is so flattering.
Getter 404 on Twitter asks, if and when IDW moves their Power Rangers line past Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, are there any other solo books you'd be interested in? And that's a reference to your work on Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Pink.
Okay, yeah, okay, so I guess, so Boom does Power Rangers, so they just mean, like, if it goes past, like, Mighty Morphin, what I would want to write. So there are two things that I would really want to write. One, seriously, is a Rita Repulsa book. We know so little about Rita, and I would just love to write, like, a past of her, like, to see, like, a young Rita and how she became who she is. Because I love villains, I love female villains, and I love female villains that are that way because they're like crafty and not because like, oh, bad stuff happened to them and now they're mean, but like because they get the same sort of like, I'm the smartest megalomania that male villains do. So I'd love to write Rita. I also, so Sarah Stern, the colorist on Power Rangers Pink, and I have talked on other podcasts, like, we've talked a lot about how our dream is to write a Goldar story called Eat, Pray, Destroy. Where it's just like Goldar, like, finding himself because we love Goldar.
those are both very good. I like both of those. As long as it's not about that pig from the movie.
We're no. No.
Why? Why did you bring it up, Matt?
This question that comes from Doubting_Tom on Twitter. Ooh, who wants to know? He wants to know, what's the coolest wrestling move that a Megazord could and should perform? Then he wants us to narrow it down to a particular Megazord.
Well, I'm going to go with my favorite Megazord is Typhonus from my run on Power Rangers Pink, obviously. Oh, God, I have to pick a wrestling move. This is, like, really hard. Because, I mean, the obvious thing is to say the Sling Blade, because I love me some Finn, and I've written that. I feel like I would know how to write that if I had to. We'll go with, like, a pedigree. I'd like to see Typhonus do, like, a pedigree on someone. Because, like, Megazords are really big, and I kind of wonder how they would do that. So, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. I'll tell you, the move that immediately entered my mind was a Tiger Suplex. I would love to see a Megazord do a Tiger Suplex.
I mean, yeah, like, obviously. I mean, my very first thought was, like, a Tombstone Piledriver, but that seems like a lot, like, from a Megazord, so...
But wouldn't that be great to see?
Yeah, it would. So I mean, maybe I'll change my answer. I'll stop. I'll pretend like no one's telling me no, like I did the last time that I was writing wrestling. I'll say that I want to see a Megazord do a Tombstone Piledriver.
It would have to be an Undertaker or a Kane Megazord, though, or it'd be banned.
Like an Undertaker themed Megazord is my aesthetic. Like I just, it's like everything I believe in is an Undertaker themed.
This question comes from the Anarchist on Twitter. Oh,
Chris. Hi, buddy.
Who says, ask Teeny about the weird Mo and Jason Todd connection. That's Mo from The Simpsons, by the way. Mo Sizzler.
So, at Heroes Con and all over the East Coast, there is a chain called Jason's Deli that's like a deli. Like a walk-in deli with a salad bar or whatever. And it was at Heroes Con one year. I was hanging out with Chris and some other friends. And we kept deciding that we always go to Jason's Deli for some reason. Or we always, because it's like, they have a salad bar. And like at a convention, after 3 days of like convention pizza and booze and stuff, you're often like, hey, something green sounds good to stop the pain in my body. I don't remember who, but someone referred to Jason's Deli, because there was like the salad bar, the buffet, as Uncle Jason's Family Feed Bag, as a reference to Uncle Moe's Family Feed Bag from The Simpsons. And then we were like, who's Uncle Jason? And we were like, oh, that's what Damian Wayne calls Jason Todd. So it became this joke that like when Mo puts the fries on his head and the basket is too hot, that we just wanted to commission someone drawing us like Red Hood in his helmet with like the basket of hot fries on his head, like feeding them to like the Teen Titans or something.
That's how he got that white streak in his hair.
Yeah, because it burned. It was a scar from the fries. But yeah, Uncle Jason's Family Feed Bag is what we call Jason's Deli. And for some reason, it's specifically Jason Todd's like franchise chain of restaurants near conventions.
I could definitely imagine Jason Todd yelling at a kid.
Please take the basket off my head, kid. The fries are extremely hot.
Yeah, for telling him that his sody's too cold and his teeth hurt.
Oh, it makes your freaking teeth hurt. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, Chris. That was kind of a had-to-be-there question, but I'll explain it to the people if they want to know.
This is a deep cut. This question is from Tales to Enrage on Twitter, who wants to know, which do you bring to a fight, a sword or a bow?
I'll answer this in Overwatch terms. Hanzo is my favorite, but I'm a much better Genji. So, I have to say a sword.
All right. Cross your tabs appropriately, listeners. And I guess I'll ask this one. It's not really a question for you, Teeny, but you can answer it if you like. This is from an account that only asks questions on War Rocket Ajax, Stone Cold HCC.
Yes. Oh.
Who says, please explain to me what in the crap is the Dow Jones Industrial Average? And I can take the reins on this one.
Go nuts.
Stone Cold HCC, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is the stock price of 30 large publicly owned U.S. Companies in lots of different sectors. It's just a way of showing how the largest parts of the American economy are working in an average that shows that. Okay, that's going to do it for our listener questions.
I learned something.
Teeny Howard has been our guest. Teeny, before we let you go, please tell all our listeners where they can find you online if you wish to be found.
Sure. The place where I'm probably most active is Twitter. I'm at Teeny Howard, so it's T-I-N-I Howard, like the duck. I also met teenyhoward.com. My website is also a Tumblr because I don't know what I'm doing, so you can follow that. And I'll be at a couple conventions this summer. I'm obviously not at C2E2 because I'm here on the phone with you fine people, but I'll be at Five Points Fest, Tidewater Comic Con, San Diego, which is a little local con you might have heard of. A couple others. So, yeah, follow me on Twitter. I'll hopefully see you guys at a con this summer. So,
all right. Our guest has been Teenie Howard. Teenie, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you, Kristen, Matt.
All of your stuff has been fantastic. So everybody should run out and pick up the Magdalena, grab WWE number 3, get everything, go to TidewaterCon, because I'll be there too, and pick up everything Teenie's got on the table.
Power Rangers Pink Trade just came out on Wednesday, so if you want to read all my Power Rangers Pink work with Kelly Thompson and Brendan Fletcher and Danielle DiNicolo and Sarah Stern, go. You can go get that. That's the whole thing, because I know some people are trade waiters. That's okay.
Teenie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I had a blast.
Thanks once again to Teenie Howard for a fantastic interview. I cannot wait to have her back on the show to talk more about her stuff and her history working in a comic book store, which is always my favorite thing to talk to people about. But Matt, is it a panel president week already?
It is not. It is a listener question week. I'm going to grab a question from our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com, where you can send listener questions. This question comes from Settle Chaos 711, who wants to know, what is the most badass of the original Image launch titles?
I mean, it's got to be Youngblood, right? Like, I mean, look, I know that I'm a little close to Youngblood right now. We've got a graphic novel with Rob coming out, and Chad is writing the new Youngblood. But I'm not writing it, though. But, like, if you're talking about what's badass, like, Youngblood, Youngblood's the most badass, right? It's the most well over the top actiony fighty comic of that lineup. It's got to be.
It's certainly the most. Rob probably stayed the closest to Marvel of anybody. Not to say that, like, there weren't some kind of X-Men looking characters in, like, Wetworks or whatever.
Well, I mean, like, Wildcats is not super far off from X-Men. Like, in that they, like, go find a dude in the first issue who is essentially a mutant, you know? Like, they go find Warblade.
Yeah, but there are no characters in Wildcats that are just, like, straight up Wolverine.
I mean, his name is Warblade. I mean, and he has blades for hands.
That's fair. Okay, but so I mean, let's go through Blood. Let's go through all the actual Image launch titles. There was Youngblood. There was Wildcats. There was Spawn.
There's Spawn. Well, it might actually be Spawn, but I still feel like it's Youngblood. Shadowhawk.
Yeah,
was one.
That was the
and
Jim Valentino.
Jim Valentino, and Savage Dragon was the other. And I think that's it. I think that's the five. Well, there's seven Image founders, right? So who are we missing?
Are we missing Wills Portacio? Was that Wetworks?
Yeah, I guess. Was that one of the first ones?
I think so. And
I'll do some quick research in here.
And Mark Silvestri had Cyberforce.
Oh, I forgot about Cyberforce.
Now, Cyberforce was very X-Men ripoff also.
Yes. Yeah. You had the six studios were Todd McFarlane Productions, Wildstorm, Highbrow, which was Eric Larson, Shadowline, which was Jim Valentino, Top Cow, which was Silvestri, and Extreme, which was Rob. And so you had Spawn, Wildcats. They were Covert Action Team, Matt.
Uh-huh.
There was Savage Dragon, Shadowhawk, Cyberforce, and Youngblood. And I'll say this about Youngblood.
So Wetworks must have come later. Okay.
Wetworks was later. Wills Portacio came later, I think. But let me just say this about Youngblood. It has the word blood in the title.
Sure.
Which is super badass. Because it's about, like, young blood heroes. They're like a new generation of heroes. That title works on so many levels. I love it. The cover to number one, the flip cover, says first explosive issue. The first story is Shaft killing a dude. The first thing that happens in that book is that Shaft kills a dude in the mall by throwing a pin into his throat from several yards away. And then the flip story was like a bizarre like military action story where like it's basically the Ultimates. Like it's by far the most badass.
I've done a little research. Apparently Wetworks was intended to be an Image launch title that got held up.
Okay.
So it was held up for personal reasons and it didn't start until 1994. So it was only the six. Honestly, I'll say this. Of those six launch titles, Spawn and Savage Dragon were the only ones that weren't, let's just do X-Men. Like, even Shadowhawk kind of
I
is.
Okay, I think you're being very uncharitable to Youngblood. Because obviously, like one of the things about the early Image books is that they were new superhero titles. Because they were all creators who had worked on superhero books before. Like, that's where they came from. So they're obviously going to have a lot of influence from what those guys were working on before, you know, X-Men, X-Force, all that good stuff. But I feel like it's not like it's Youngblood is such a forward thinking concept in that it really is. It has a lot more in common with the Ultimates than it does with X-Men because it's about like militarized, publicly known, kind of celebrity superheroes, which I think is like I think it's genuinely brilliant.
I mean,
I talked about that before I worked with Rob, and I will talk about that after.
I mean, those are good points. I think probably the best idea of all the Image launch titles, and I think we got a little too oversaturated with it, so we got a little tired of it, but. It's probably Spawn. Spawn's probably the best idea of all of those Image launch titles. So we'll agree to disagree.
I actually genuinely think Wildcats is a really good idea.
They're all probably better than we give them credit for, or people give them credit for now.
I am here for the critical reexamination of the Image launch titles. I will tell you that. Like, that is...
People sleep on Shadowhawk, but Shadowhawk is an African-American superhero, and the book dealt with, like, current relevant stuff, like HIV. And in pretty, you know, not offensive ways. So, you know, it's time to reevaluate Shadowhawk. Nobody talks about Shadowhawk anymore.
Nobody does talk about Shadowhawk. I don't know about... Like, look, I will admit it has been a long time since I've read Shadowhawk, but I relatively not offensive is probably the way I would describe it.
Yeah, I had to temper my language there. All right. Thank you for sending in that question. Like I said, if you would like to send in a question, you can do so at our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also send us questions at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can send every story ever, panel president lists, and let us know if you want to sponsor the show, or if you just want to send us a comment, you can do so there. Check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. Check us out on iTunes also. If you like the show, leave us a review there, please. The more positive reviews we get on iTunes, the more we are featured there. Now we've reached a part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us on the internet. For me, all you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net. And you will find links to all of my stuff, including Supreme Villainy, the memoir of King Oblivion PhD, coming to bookstores on June 6th, 2017. Get your pre-orders in now. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
People can find my stuff by going to the-isb.com. I just had a new issue of Radical Guardian Skater X come out on Comixology. It's 16 pages. It's 99 cents. It would be super cool if you picked it up. Number one and number two are both on Comixology Unlimited, if you are a subscriber to that service, so you can get caught up that way. There's a new issue of Dracula the Unconquered coming. And, perhaps more importantly, X-Men 92 Volume 2 Lilapalooza just came out last week as well. It is out in stores. It'll be at Amazon in a couple weeks. if you're a person who gets their comics from Amazon. But your local shop has it now. Comixology has it now as a digital collection. It is the second and final volume of the second series of X-Men 92. And it would be great if you could pick that up as well. Keep an eye out for Deadpool Bad Blood coming soon, May 17th. Are you going to be anywhere for Free Comic Book Day?
I will not. I will be just kind of going around to some of my local shops here and seeing what's up. Just kind of checking out the sights.
I will be signing at Ultimate Comics, and Sword Quest number 0 is going to be out, so I will, that one is only going to be 25 cents. I know there are a couple of stores, I cannot speak for Ultimate, but I know a couple of stores are planning on giving that one away for free on Free Comic Book Day as well, because it's so cheap to begin with. But expect to lay down a quarter for that if you're going to pick it up. Come see me if you are in the Triangle, or if you're in North Carolina, make a drive, because all three Ultimate Comics locations are going to have cool people like me doing some signing, having some fun. That does it for our 350th episode, Matt. We did it. We accomplished it. We accomplished something.
We accomplished HQC.
Here's my question. Of those 350, from 1 to 350, how many have been HQC? How many have been S rank?
Hang on a second. Let me do the calculations.
Okay. I'll wait. If you could give me like a percentage, I mean, a flat number would be great, but if you can give me like a percentage, that would also work.
Chris, this is unprecedented what I'm looking at here. So I just put in the calculator, you know. How many episodes have been HQC? How many S rank? And the number just came up 420.
Have a great week, everybody.
We love you.
Yeah! Sorry, the hot mic.
Hot mic.